wheel of time turns and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Welcome to Dragamount. I'm Kathy Campbell.
I'm Rajiv Mote.
And I'm Maureen Carr. All right, so the episode we're talking about today is episode 7 of season 2 of the Wheel of Time television show. The episode is called Days Daymar. It was directed by Sanaa Hamri and written by Justine Jewel Gilmer.
Excellent. All right, this episode.
Yeah, where do we even, like, I don't know. It was mixed feelings here.
Yeah, it feels to me, this is the episode that has the strongest manipulations in order to get everyone where they need to be, in my mind.
I think that's really well put. Really well put. And I like how you phrased that, because it's in contrast to, like, the last episode, which was really thematically framed around a character arc, or, you know, a character being broken, or almost broken, essentially. Mm-hmm. It was really deep into how those character interactions were working, the emotions that come through, all of that. This feels very, very plot, and very, very kind of forced, maybe?
Yeah.
Disjointed.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say disjointed necessarily, so much as it feels very much like, in order for episode 6 to get the space that it could, they had to make changes and adjustments. I guess force would make sense then, because they're forcing everything to now get where it needs to get that they couldn't do in episode 6, because they wanted to be able to focus so deeply on character.
Yeah.
And that's it's unfortunate, because I mean, this is a space that I think that 10 episodes would allow the balance to be different.
Yeah.
And because we don't have that, even though we have a little bit more runtime, we don't have those two extra episodes that really would have made a huge difference.
Yeah.
And so Rafe and the team kind of had to do what they have to do to make this episode happen, which I think is, it's unfortunate, because I feel like this episode 7 is going to be, compared with episode 6, so strongly.
Yeah.
And so it will be seen as so disappointing.
Yeah.
Compared to 6.
Yeah.
And I just really hope that episode 8 is able to kind of bring it all around and close it up in the way that season 1 was not able to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember some time ago, Sarah Nakamura was talking about how she was helping, you know, she's a consultant for the show, and she's a super fan, and she was trying to figure out a way for certain characters to get certain places, and she said it was a struggle, and she couldn't think of how to get them there. And she says she was so close to going to Rafe and just saying, make a river somewhere and have them get on a boat. And I wonder if this is it, because it has been very tricky trying to get all these characters into one place.
That would make sense, especially in particular with one of the Two Rivers 5 that basically blinks and shows up where they need to be. Which, you know what, let's go ahead and let's start there. We were originally going to start with Perrin, but we're going to skip Perrin, just like, you know, a lot of people do in the books, and head straight to Matt instead.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Fair but true.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. All right. Well, so Matt, I really think that this is what Sarah was talking about, because
for sure,
the first scene, you see Matt, he's kind of wandering around the foregate. He looks a little sad. I'm guessing it's right after he decided not to go with Rand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like he's behind the same cloth.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 It's and so that location. that feels tied in. And he's just, okay, I'm going to walk. And then someone in a cloak that we don't know who, guessing the man based on the hand. Yep. Yeah, we may never know who, knocks him out. And then he wakes up on a carpet that looks similar, but not quite the same. And Lanfear's like, hey, welcome to Falm.
I honestly thought it was Lan, and they were bringing him to the Sun Palace where Rand was. And that, because then when he wakes up, it's kind of like a grand room. So it's like, oh, okay, good. They're going to put Matt and Rand together again. So I was really excited about that. But then Lanfear was there, and I was like, shit.
Shit. Yep, that's not true. Yeah. And it's the funny part is Matt is just like, who are you? You know, what the heck is going on? And Lanfear's just like, haha, I'm going to say nothing and just mention, you know, I love being owed a favor.
Right.
And then strides off. And real quick, I need to comment on her incredible jumpsuit.
Oh, yeah.
That is gorgeous. I love it so much. She's recently become obsessed.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. Absolutely killing it. So if I could get one in my size, that would be great. and Matt just kind of is like, WTF. And then goes to the door and suddenly realizes that he's in Falm. You see all of the Shanchen boats in the water. The lighting is so different than in Kyrian, which I find really interesting. Everything's kind of blown out and extra warm to really get that essence of heat and warmth that you get as opposed to Kyrian, which is very blue.
Yeah. And snowing. It snowed in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Or was that last episode?
Last episode, I think. It all kind of blends together.
Yeah, I know. It does.
You know, we've had a week in between. It's going to rain in this episode, but that's a whole other story. So the next part time you see Matt, Ishii is just kind of sitting there whittling, and Matt's sitting in a chair going, WTF. He even points it out. So we don't know how long he's been here. And he's just like, so you're going to walk in here and not say anything and just whittle? And then we pull out the sex thing again. It's like, is this a sex thing or a murder thing?
Oh, my God. That was hilarious.
It was so funny. And I am... This stupid tea, I think, is... Okay, part of me wonders if it just would have been better to have no Matt in this episode at all than to have this stupid thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have this moment of humanity with Ishii, who's like, you know, the first time I took this was the first time I ever slept through the night. Mm-hmm. And like, here, you can glimpse your past lives and all the people you used to be.
Know your own soul. See your own soul. Ultimately.
Yeah. And I'm just like, okay. And Matt actually... does it. He sits, you know, the timer goes off. He's already moved over to sit by the tea and he pours the tea quickly. And then he just kind of has this moment of like, oh, ooh, yee, ha, maybe, what, ha. And then chugs it. And then is like, nothing happened. And then he starts tripping.
Yeah. That edible didn't work at all.
Yeah, here, let me take another one. No, not a good idea. And like,
actually, that's what I thought he was going to do, was like down the entire teapot.
I thought so as well.
We'll talk about that more in the book area.
Mm-hmm,
but,
we get this very trippy scene. Most of it's happening in the mirrors. Matt sees himself hanging, which again, we'll have a book reference, but it looks like he's hanging from a noose, like he's been executed. We see him in a, we don't necessarily know it's him until the face actually turns, but we see a figure in a military outfit who's slitting a woman's throat or killing her. We see a figure who's drowning another person, or at least like waterboarding them, doing some sort of torture.
Yes.
So we're getting the impression that these are Matt's past lives and he's not a good guy. And of course we have his mother there who's constantly calling him a prick, just like your father, again and again and again. And then there's this very Twin Peaks moment where he turns into his mom, and then he says the same thing to his mom, and then he screams, and then she screams, and very, very Killer Bob sort of stuff. But
yeah, it's just weird.
It was comical. Like, I laughed, I think, during it, because I was like, I don't know what they're going for, but this is not doing it for me.
No, and it's like it wasn't even overwhelming enough for me. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, it was like three things, three visuals.
Yeah, like three, maybe four if you count
as,
like,
mom.
It's just, it was disappointing, almost. Mm-hmm. And then the next part too. Ishii's like petting Matt.
Well, okay, so we were all expecting that to happen. He's got to like fondle or stroke all three of the boys.
Yeah,
gosh, that's so
become like a running joke in the show. I think the joke would have landed more if the visions we saw were deeper and more disturbing.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
but
too, Ishii is like, having this emotional moment of like, the wheel keeps turning, even in the freedom of death we are somehow again and again, and all I want to do is close my eyes one day and never have to open again. And here's Matt like crying, and he goes, how? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, this is meant to be this like poignant moment. Mm-hmm. And it just was not.
Yeah.
It was rushed. It was unearned. So that catharsis we get of Matt saying, yes, I want to embrace oblivion too, just like you, father of lies. you know, we haven't had enough investment into that for that to really pay off.
Yeah. And like, why does Ishii want to die? Like,
I think we know it from book lore enough that he's a nihilist through and through, and you know, his philosophy is the oblivion, the destruction of the wheel. It isn't even for the Dark One to remake the world into a pleasing form. It's the peace of nothingness. It's liberation from the wheel, but evil. But
it
hasn't been stolen yet. It's sold, really, to us.
Yeah.
And like this idea that Matt suddenly wants to kill himself too. Like, I don't know. It just was awkward and weird. Mm-hmm. And on top of the fact that, you know, he suddenly is halfway across the country, mm-hmm, in a blink of an eye because Lanfear wants Ishii to owe her a favor. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I didn't like it, mm-hmm, at all. And it's depressing.
Yeah. Well,
and it's such a jarring change, mm-hmm, when we had, you know, that wonderful reunion between Rand and Matt. And it felt real. That felt like old friends coming together again. And I was so able to buy that in a way that I was just not able to buy this turn from that, this 180 turn from that reunion.
Yeah.
So,
And just another thing, speaking about the travel, we did talk about Lanfear not traveling when she was chasing Rand and Moraine.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, did she travel this time? And then we see little bit later the Waygate, which we'll talk about later, but like, why is she not traveling when she can travel?
Yeah, I think the thing is to think of here is the fact that, like, specifically for when trying to chase Moraine and when trying to chase Moraine and Rand, She didn't know where they would be. Uh-huh. She knew where they were going to end up, uh-huh. but couldn't just like travel and mm-hmm. find them.
Yeah, and I buy that. That's a yeah. logical explanation.
And so I wonder if when it, yeah, we'll have to talk about traveling a little mm-hmm. bit more in the book thing, just because I don't yeah. want to necessarily, but it's
it hasn't
possible,
been established here yet.
So. Yeah, there's no specifics in here. But she had to have been able to do something to get Matt there. And I don't know what, mm-hmm. unless it was the way, like, a way gate. And just he was passed out, so you don't see it. Kind of like with the Elaine and Egwene uh-huh. and Nynaeve.
Yeah.
Because she woke up.
Nynaeve intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's possible that
they slept the whole way.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way it's possible. But yeah, now Matt's in foam. Mm-hmm. Hooray.
Yeah.
Weird. You know, this feels like one of those lasting effects of, you know, COVID and the Matt switch, like trying to get Matt back with the group because they did want him to be a part of the original hunt.
Uh-huh.
And so they had to, you know, do what they had to do to make it kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's.
It just would have been so much easier if he went with Matt and Lan.
With Rand and Lan?
Rand and Lan.
Yeah. I mean, not that they would have gone very far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if Lan would have knocked him out and carried him along and been like, hey, yeah, you need to be here too.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's just, you know, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. It happened and that's it. That's literally it. That's mm-hmm. all that we have of Matt mm-hmm. is this weird scene, but now he's in foam. So hooray.
So do we want to speculate? Ishamael says something to him about universes shattering by the stab of a dagger or something like that. That felt foreshadowy, but I don't know. Do you have any speculation on what that might mean?
I think it's probably the idea of what Min's viewing is, mm-hmm. that Matt's gonna stab Rand, and that's why they want him in foam to kill the dragon, because they know that probably they can't do it as the Forsaken, because it would be too much against the wheel. And so in order to kind of fix that problem, oh, let me just have somebody else do it. Maybe
it's I don't know what's going on yet, though, because it really does feel like Ishamael's, from his conversation with Lanfear, Ishamael's plan is to get Rand to declare himself and to turn to the dark. Mm-hmm. That is what he is engineering everything to be. He wants Rand to see all of his friends suffering and to basically make a deal with the devil, with him. In order to say, hey, I'll join you, just leave my friends alone.
Mm-hmm.
Which then I don't know how that fits with Min's viewing of Matt stabbing Rand
mm-hmm.
and how that fits with Ishamael wanting Matt to be there. But I guess that's for episode 8 to show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But well, it's fine. You know, we'll hopefully this will set it up, and episode 7, this penultimate episode of the season, is just like going to be the lowest point for reasons in order to mm-hmm. make episode 8 all the stronger.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we go back to the cold open then? The flashback?
No, we're gonna go to Perrin. Sorry, you forgot about Perrin again.
Oh, poor Perrin. He didn't do anything, really, this episode.
That's true. Yeah. This episode, Perrin is there as a vessel to introduce yourself, the audience, to the ABC maidens, to a little bit more of the eel, a little bit more about.
I didn't know they were called ABC majors.
Yeah, that is very clever.
Tom made that. Uh-huh. Okay. You know, we have Avienda, Bane, and Shiad, and so Perrin's just there to kind of be the audience members as Avi shows off her guilt. Or her toe.
Or her commitment to meeting her obligation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Shall we say that? For the death of Julian.
Julian. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Because she feels like it was her fault that the fellow maiden died. And so in order to do that, to accept that obligation, she allows Bane and Shiad to basically kick her ass until she can't stand up anymore. Hopper, very good boy, very not happy.
Hopper doesn't like it, and Perrin's reaction is the same as Perrin's reaction when he burst, from White Cloak captivity and what's the White Cloak's name? That's Valda, right?
Yeah, Valda.
You know, he was basically standing there and sort of growling and not moving. And Valda was like, "What are you?" And then Egwene finally has to get free and stab him last season.
Right.
But, you know, it kind of felt like Perrin was just sort of standing there and saying, maybe it would be culturally insensitive if I didn't butt in on this, so I'll just watch. And Hopper is like, "No, stop it! That's my friend." He's barking.
Well, and I mean, to be fair, he did look like he wanted to make adjustments enough to where she's like, to where Avi was like, "No, you need to know."
Yeah, he did try to step in.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but Hopper definitely made most of the impression.
Yeah, well, poor Hopper, he was not a happy boy.
Not a happy boy whatsoever. One thing
I did like about this scene was that they had a lot of the Aiel maiden hand talk. So they have a sign language all to themselves. And when they don't want Perrin included in the conversation, they just switch right to the hand talk, which is cool, which felt very book-like and was a great indicator of their culture and how they'll be as they... as we see more of them.
Yeah, and I like that they didn't necessarily go in and fully translate everything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So, like, the first bits of it, you don't necessarily know what is being said. But then when they're walking and, you know, before this scene, Perrin is like, "Okay, I think I'm trying to understand this," and Avi's like, "Yeah, it's okay." And Perrin is like, "Oh, kind of like, you know, what you owe me," and Avi is like, "It is dishonorable to remind me of my obligation." But yes, that was great. Like, I like that happened. And mm-hmm. then they're talking about Perrin's wife. And that, can't sleep with anybody else. And Bane will be disappointed.
But Shiad
will not care. Yeah. I loved that.
It's like so funny. We have to flag all of the queer characters so they can be found.
But yeah, the translation of the Maiden Hand Talk is when they see the ocean. Mm. And this is all water? How? Mm-hmm. I hope for the final episode they lighten this up a little bit. It was really hard to see. It was
at least
so
on
difficult.
Our screeners. Yeah. It was it was not good balance on that. I had to actually crank up my brightness.
I'm really hoping, because like I could not tell what they were looking at until they were like, "Oh, all of this water." I was like, "Oh, okay, so they must be looking at the water. Cool." Like it took a while. Mm-hmm. But Perrin has also made it to Falm.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Yeah. So we have two transit systems basically going on. There's the Forsaken Express and then there's the long route
for
Perrin. Oh, and the ways. So you walking or ways or the Forsaken Express, which may or may not also be
the ways. Yeah, right. That's funny. One thing that was cool was Perrin being able to spot the Aiel in the desert when they were crouching. Like, that was cool.
I like that they did that. And it makes me wonder if he smelled her as well, or just saw. And I didn't see her in the first watch, but in the second one, I could see her. Yeah. I was like, okay, that's really cool.
I thought she was a statue. Like, I thought she was like an eyeball statue.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, what's that? And then it was like, he's like, there's a woman over there. And I was like, oh.
We're
okay. Wetlander.
It's just an Aiel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very Wetlander. Yeah. As it rained a lot today. Extreme Wetlander.
Okay. Yeah. So now four of the five are in Falm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Falm, let's hang out in Falm. So because of all of the jumping around and all over the place and everything, we've decided instead of splitting by characters, we are now moving it to kind of, now that we've done Perrin and Matt, we're going to kind of talk about, like, via location and go in time order, I guess. Chronological. That's the word. Chronological order, in order to kind of make sure we get everything covered. So in that chronological order, we start with Nynaeve and Elaine, who are working on their next plan.
Yeah, and Elaine has become the boss, which surprised me a little. I mean, Nynaeve's grumpy about it, but she
does it.
Yeah, and I think that's the part that surprised me the most, is how much she's allowing Elaine to take charge, which it also does make sense because she fucked up so bad with basically killing or allowing to be captured. Right. Rima.
Also the whole following Leandrin thing.
Yeah.
Kind of her plan. So
yeah, maybe it's that makes sense
to let the daughter heir take over.
And we
have the little comic scene of they see Loial walking through the streets of Falm, and they pull him aside, and he of course recognizes and greets Nynaeve. But he bows before Elaine and is just so, you know.
He's
like, bowing and scraping.
So I loved it.
The part I really loved is Elaine's face. Because Nynaeve is so over it. But Kira Coveney, dude, this is perfect.
It
she
is. She
did.
Graciously accepting her. Her deal.
Like, we will, I could talk about Madeline Madden's acting, you know, forever, because episode six, obviously, was flawless. But this moment felt so Elaine. The look of, okay, I'm going to let him finish. Like, obviously, it's rude to interrupt a builder. This is not necessarily, this is my due. Like, I am, you know, allowed this. But so much as she knows that the Ogier want to be respectful. And they want to be able to introduce themselves in the way that they're comfortable with. And so she lets it happen, but still takes charge. She comes in and is just like, okay, oh, hey, thank you. Your name sings my ears. I mean, that's what Nynaeve says. But
Nynaeve just says, yes, yes.
Yeah. But like, she's just like, okay, let's get to business. Let's find Egwene. And they figure out kind of where she is.
Yeah, Loial knows that. So they know the location. Yeah. They know that only Suldam can approach.
And they know that they have the tools to have that happen.
Yeah. And, you know, towards the end of their sequence, they actually ambush a Suldam in the streets. And we learn something new about the Adam, that the collar will work on a Suldam. They collar a random unlucky Suldam. And now they've got the way to get into or get close to the kennel.
Yes.
In theory, because they can take the Soldom's outfit, but they don't have anything for the Damani yet.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. And they also don't have the tattoos.
Oh, good point.
The Soldom have on the cheeks. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how much of that is altered, especially mm-hmm. if you look at it, the Soldom are Shanshin. Mm-hmm. Damani are anyone that can channel, but the Soldom are only Shanshin. They don't test for Soldom in the, you know, captured cities and stuff. And so, I think Nynaeve could pass possibly if they can, you know, figure out how to do the tattoos. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be something that they can channel and fit and like let just settle on there. I don't know. We'll find out in the next episode.
Yeah. I had not thought about that wrinkle because, obviously, now that you have a visual that's associated with the Soldom that goes beyond their outfits, how do you impersonate one? Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, once they wear that blue makeup when they're actually attached to the Damani, so maybe they can just have that and no one will notice.
Well, they seem to only wear that makeup when they're in battle, because it's not just when they're attached, because we see that when we see Egwene and they're in this big, like, desert area outside of
Fall. They don't have the blue makeup then.
And they don't have the blue makeup. They just have the tattoos, the scarring that's etched into their cheeks to kind of show that honor.
Mm. Okay, good point. Yeah, maybe that's because they're Damani in training? I don't know.
No, because the Soldom are the ones that have the scarring, and the head, like Soldom, who's takes them out. She's not wearing the. She doesn't have it either. On.
Okay.
Yeah, just the scars, the etching. Which I didn't look. We see the overall outline of that, the tattoo scarring things on the cheeks are very similar. But are they the same, like, designs?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they look like they're the same, but, yeah, I haven't looked closely.
Yeah, they look similar but not exact. So it'd be really interesting to see if it's like this is the traditional, everyone gets it the same, but maybe they get more when they get different levels. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But Egwene is out with we've also seen the blue sitter. Mm-hmm. Megan is there standing with the head Soldom, all set and ready to go. Mm-hmm. And they're gonna take all of the Damani out to get their strength to see how strong they are. And the first one goes and it's fine. You know, the dust almost got to us. Congratulations. You're so strong. And the other Damani the other Soldom comes up to Rena and is like, hey, what have you named your Damani? And she's just like, I have let her keep her name. And the face that the Soldom did was like,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's not going to last for very long. And they walk out to that same spot, and Rena is just like, look, you know what? I don't need you to do anything, so you can be stubborn all you want, but don't embarrass me. Rena manages to just completely demolish the area using Egwene's power.
And like everybody fell down, it looked like the blast just knocked them all to their butts.
And it made it all the way to the city, and the poor cat got woken up. Yeah. Like, that poor kitty.
Poor kitty.
He was just taking a nap. Yeah.
Or was it the flows, do you think? Because aren't cats sensitive to that?
I think it was the actual, like, the sound and the dust.
Okay.
Because everyone else also reacted. Yeah, you saw Loyal get caught and whatnot. And then that's when it transitions. Although he's getting made fun of, Loial is. And by the kids, they're mm-hmm. laughing, saying, oh, the builder's a slave. Ha ha ha. Which I thought was so sad.
Very sad. He doesn't deserve that.
Nope. But then he got to see his friends. Yeah. So that was nice. And then Egwene is back in the cage thing.
Yeah, with, and being given herself. A very creepy sponge bath.
Oh, you're so yeah. creepy.
The honor, like, you know that Rena is just, like, trying to, you know, hey, let's, I've got you. You know, mm-hmm. Let me take care of you. Mm-hmm. Let me get the dirt off of your hands and your face.
Now. Yeah.
Yep.
Which
yep.
is what I do to my doggy's paws after we take him for a walk. I sit there and I wipe his paws. I think that's
exactly yeah. what it was supposed uh-huh, to be.
Exactly.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. And Rena just is like, hey, I realized why you fight me. Like, no one's told you why we're here. And then talks about how the Seanchan Empress has been, you know, given the task to unite everyone under the light. The last battle is coming, and we will only be able to fight it if we stand together, all of us, including you and me. And Egwene kind of takes this moment and says, Rena, and yes, Egwene, Rena's face just like lights up. And Egwene is like, I will kill you. And it makes Rena take the bowl and stalk out. Mm. And Egwene just kind of sits there and angrily is braiding her hair. Just kind of like, it's a good throwback to the women's ceremonies. Yeah, uh-huh. It's just like all Absolutely. Of the rest of the That's women are with thinking. Me.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Like I'm not yep. alone.
Yeah. Yeah mm-hmm. Especially because she took her hair out of the braids that the Damani have, mm-hmm. and so is able to sit there and braid it in her, you know, traditional Two Rivers style mm-hmm. to kind of own herself a yeah. little bit.
So she's still not broken.
Yep. That's just nice. Had a little bit of a moment.
Yeah,
an emotional thing.
Yeah,
as one will.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah. right. When you're collared you know, in.
I think that's the cool thing is, you know, we still have this sequence. Like, that was a really good sequence. It was a creepy oh,
yeah.
sequence.
Yeah. But
a really good oh, sequence yeah. that was a continuation of episode 6. And I think amidst all of the kind of frenetic activity that had to happen in this episode, we still had at least some moments that could extend on what made it so powerful before.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Agreed. And I learned that the actor that plays Rena, their preferred pronouns are he, him, yep. and then they, them, before mm-hmm. she, her. So that's just something to make note of in the future when we talk of, I think his name is pronounced like Xenia, possibly. But he's absolutely phenomenal in this role.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Cannot wait to see more of him. I cannot wait for Rena to get absolutely slaughtered or tortured. But I'm excited to see the actor and other things.
And we should talk about that in the book area, whether, you know, the fate that's deserved is the fate that ends up be delivered. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Indeed. Yeah, and just one more thing about Rena, the devotion on their face, the way their eyes sparkle when they're looking at Egwene. It's so silly, but it is so easy to see. Oh my God, that's exactly how I look at my puppy. Like with such devotion and such tenderness. And then, but of course I don't beat my puppy. So it's really like, you know, a weird juxtaposition where Rena's looking at like, oh, Egwene, we're going to do so much good together. And then Egwene can't touch the water, you know, for like the last episode, and like, oh, my poor little puppy, I'm gonna have to hurt you. And it's just so strange, but I love those facial expressions, just the glittering in their eyes. Yeah. Insane.
Well, it's good. And it's combined with Rena's ambition. Like this episode underlined that this is going to be a matter of position for Rena and status among the Seanchan. So that's what she's staking, you know, this interaction with Egwene about. And so it's sort of a double betrayal when your pet betrays you as well as your path to glory betrays you.
Yes. Yeah. Because, I mean, when they're walking out to the spot too, Retta says, hey, you know, you are going to, did you see that light? It was pretty amazing that you saw it. I know you saw it. And it's going to be even more amazing because you are going to be even stronger. And I know that everyone will like hear this, like see the light, and they will know that you belong to me, that you are mine. And that's just, oh, goodness. Absolutely emotional. Let's see what happens, shall we?
Yeah.
So with that, we're going to head to the cold open, which as in the past has kind of been a balance of kind of where the episode ends too, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
And you see this a little bit of history going on. Moiraine and Swan are Aes Sedai, and they're in their blue outfits, but they're very different. You can see that they have embraced their personal style. Moiraine is in the beautiful, another beautiful pantsuit, which was absolutely gorgeous. And Swan is in a traditional Taryn outfit. That's really cool. And they're like, okay, now that the war is over, what's the future gonna bring? You know, I'm so nervous. But you can come meet my family. Like, won't that be great? And Swan is just is nervous because, like, Swan doesn't want these fancy things that Moiraine does because Moiraine, you know, was a lady and used to being a lady and things and is sitting here with Swan, but they love each other and they, you know, want to have their plans for the future but they're on a task. They're on a mission to pass on a message from the Emirlin to Guitara, who is the keeper, and let them know that the war is over. Well, their timing was impeccable. Because they showed up just... Can you imagine if this foretelling had happened and nobody had seen it? Like, is a foretelling happen if no one witnesses?
Exactly. I don't know.
But they're there just in time for Guitara to sit through this foretelling moment, because you see Tigraine as she's giving birth, it's cutting the scenes in between, so you know that this is happening at that time that it's supposed to be happening. Like, the baby is being born, and they're like, tell no one, but you gotta find the dragon reborn.
She just made it so hard for them.
So hard. The
tell
children.
No one thing. I mean, come on. Well, okay, yeah, they are full Aes Sedai right now, but...
But they're still babies. They're still fresh.
Well, fresh that's interesting, right? Because Moiraine is older than Anivir. 20 years ago, her father was still alive. They're acting like, oh, we just graduated and we should just run off and get married. But, oh, no, we got to get a job for a little bit. But after that, we'll go off and
after
get
that,
married.
After that, I'll be your fish
you know,
wife.
How old do you think they are at this point?
They got to, I mean, got to be 50, 60.
Yeah,
but
right?
But they call it their 40-year quest, haven't they? Haven't they been looking for 40 years?
Oh,
no.
I thought, thought it was 20.
No, they couldn't. They couldn't be looking for 40 years.
Right, because that makes
then
no sense.
Rand would have been 40.
Yeah.
So yeah, it had to have been a 20-year quest.
Okay, so then they're just 40.
Yeah.
So ish. Fair enough.
Okay,
but
yeah,
if
that
she's
means,
40 and she's the older sister, then how come her sister looks ancient?
Because time.
The game of houses.
Yes, it's stressful. She doesn't have. Yeah, maybe she doesn't. I mean, she probably doesn't use sunscreen. lots of smoking. You know, all of those things.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So Moraine's got to be at least 60.
Yeah. Yeah. At least 60. Unless they're. Because we also don't know how long they were, I almost said freshmen, novices and accepted.
Right.
But we know that it's probably been a while, because it's not normal for them to pull a Nynaeve.
Yes.
Right.
So they could just be raised to Aes Sedai at 40 or 35 or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I'll buy that.
Especially if you think into joining the tower again, unlike in the books, they're not teenagers when they join the tower. Like, it's meant to be a little bit of an older,
older
age.
Well, except for Siouan, she went when she was really little.
Yeah, that's true. So I think the range of it maybe is a little bit different depending on when you're found. Maybe because
It's usually linked to puberty. But didn't the little baby Siouan look younger than that?
Yeah, but she also, like, was not precocious necessarily, but yes, precocious. she could have, like, forced it a little bit more, maybe. I don't know. It's hard to say.
We might be venturing into territory that people will say, just go with it. Nobody cares. We're a bunch of nerds.
Yes, we are a bunch of nerds. Hi, have you met us?
That's fine.
But yeah.
I think the takeaway from this flashback, though, is, you know, even we knew about the prophecy, but the reason we're seeing this particular flashback right now is, as you said, Kathy, to bookend the events between Moiraine and Siouan. So, you know, they started out as young lovers who saw a future for themselves.
So hopeful.
And then they were jointly tasked with something that was frankly impossible. And they were given constraints that were completely unreasonable. And there's an argument to be made that they utterly failed in that charge. We can talk about that as we get to the end of this sequence, but they clearly haven't had a coherent plan between them, and I think that was one of our complaints back in the first season of the podcast. We're sort of saying, well, what was the plan? They did all of these things and they're winging it at this point. They really don't know what they're doing.
Well, and I think, you know, you look at it, they came... I think their problem is that they are looking at this with what options they have available, but they, by splitting up and saying, hey, you go become a Mirlin, or, like, you lead the Aes Sedai, and I'll take care of the finding him, like they gave this, they split the party basically in a way that's not super helpful
without coordinating the activities,
right? Without really, without really managing the solution, and yet Swan's coming in and is gonna like reprimand Moiraine for, you know. Existing
well, and the first criticism she levels at her, is very emotional. Why didn't you tell me you'd been still? And you know, we saw Moiraine writing and crumpling letters exactly to that effect. So you know, it's something she wanted to tell her, but no,
but couldn't.
But didn't get the chance to, I guess. And you know, what's interesting is that that has an emotional component of why didn't you tell me that you were in this deep pain, but it also has a practical component to their plan. It's like, how the hell are you going to keep Rand under control?
Yeah.
Yeah, you literally can't do your job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Which has some grim implications with Alana that we can talk about in the book things. But
But just this comes out, like, basically, Swan is owning her Merlin status and basically saying, you can't be trusted. You freaking suck. Let me take over.
Right. Which is so heartless with Moraine going through what she's going through and then to have that thrown in her face. And it was just really sad to see that.
Yeah.
It was really,
Did it ring true to you? Because all of the interaction we've seen up until this point, including last season's oath that Moraine takes, which is, you know, putting a lot of trust in someone. This feels like a abrupt departure, so much so that I was wondering if Siwon was putting on an act for some reason. But I don't think so.
I think the stress of this moment, the stress of trying to run these Aes Sedai and manage, you know, the dragon being the dragon. I don't know if we know if she knows that the Forsaken are free yet, but probably since Lan did tell other things.
Lan did spill the beans to
probably, to I'm sure. Completely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
And basically, like, hey, all right, suck it up. I'm sharing this burden now. Mm-hmm. It's time I met Rand Althor.
Well, I mean, and that's kind of the problem with dating an underling. Like, sometimes you need to be pulling rank, and then it's like, but if you ever loved me and...
Where is HR? Come on.
I don't know, right?
This did not get filed appropriately. We know that. But we have this moment where Lan is basically going to try and take care of Rand. Rand is like stalking back and forth, really nervous, understandably so. And Lan tells him to tuck in his shirt. And he's just like, no, I'm going to be a little kid and blah, 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 blah. And Lan is just like, look, suck it up. There's one rule above all else about being a man. Whatever comes, you face it on your feet. Here, put this on. Give me your blade. And Rand, like, whoosh, hair lands on the wing and is like, nope.
It was super impressive.
Take my sword.
I mean, it was really
impressive.
Yeah, he looked really good when he did that.
Yeah, really solid.
Yeah.
And Lan is like, oh, okay, we're going to go there. Cool. And, I love how he's like, fine, keep the sword. If the Emirlin is afraid of you, it won't be for the sword. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then talks to him about using Cat Crosses the Courtyard.
Uh-huh, nice.
And then puts him in the fancy jacket. So from what I could tell, the original coat jacket was just kind of a casual Damon Dread type coat. It was very similar to Moraine's little blue jacket thing. But the new one had the Rising Sun of Kyrian, which feels like a royalty.
Well, it was Barthanas's, right? Because didn't he say, I'll give him something appropriate from my wardrobe?
Yes. And so he got that, like a fancier jacket, because so both of them were jackets, obviously, from Barthanes, and it just managed to have this extra fancy one. I don't know. It was very particular. He pulls out the warder statement of, as you have summoned me, mother, so I have come. I stand ready.
That's so cute.
And Swan's just like,
Lan has prepared you, I see. Not even a little bit. He gave him a coat. He didn't do anything. Errol taught him his sword forms, and he's had his arrogance before even Lan told him to have it.
But I wonder, I do wonder if Rand witnessed that statement from someone before, or if Lan did tell him.
Yeah. Some of it might have happened off screen.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. Like before Rand was pacing, maybe he's like, this is how you're going to greet her. This is how you're going to stand. And then we come in, quit pacing.
Right.
Yeah. In the head canon, yes, I will. In my imagination, that happened. So, fair enough.
Swan is just like, all right, what's going on? You're special. You're being very special right now. I have questions for you. Answer truthfully. And Rand's like, and then what? Just kind of like, bring it. I find it interesting that the Emirlin seat actually travels with them. It has to break down, right?
Oh, the actual chair, you mean? Yes,
the actual chair. The actual chair. It's got to break down and be transported. They're not like,
or she weaves the whole thing out of air like she does her little crown of daggers.
Maybe that'd be cool.
Oh, maybe, I don't know. But while this conversation is happening, the rest of the Aes Sedai are kind of hanging out in the, I almost said the lobby, in the courtyard of the castle. Is it the castle? Yeah, they're in the castle. And Yessica's like, ooh, the library, it's so cool. And then, like, slips Varen a map. It's like, hey, why do you need an Ogier map of the city? And Varen just ignores it and kind of does a little wink to Tomas, even though she still has the map. So I don't really know where he's going. Mm-hmm. Is he going to find the Waygate? At this point, without the map?
Without the map? Like, no. I'm sure he's just doing something else.
Yeah, but like what? Yeah. What is he? I don't know.
Well, Ivan's going to find it later. Because he doesn't trust Viren. And so he decides to follow Tomas. And we never see both of them again in this episode. So
we do a little bit when they, at the end, when they come back. But
so we have no idea what happened.
What they were doing. Yeah, but the interesting thing is Alana is telling Ivan, you know, don't go. Like, we have our task. I don't want to get separated if there's a Forsaken in the city. Mm-hmm. And Maxim is just like, supports Ivan. And because it's two against one, Alana lets him leave, mm-hmm. which the balance in that is really interesting.
Yeah, and a lot of it transpired without words. It was just like looks and emotions, and that was awesome.
Yeah. You could tell that they've been around each other a lot, mm-hmm. and that the two against one rule exists and has been used more than once, mm-hmm. I guess.
So
it's
really interesting. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. And of course, Maxim is left, and then he's saying, well, the one I'm really worried about is Leandrin, so we can cut there.
Yeah, where did she go? Mm-hmm. And we find out where she went, which was to go to the Damodred house. And Anvair is just like, oh, Aes Sedai, it's an honor to welcome you. But unfortunately, Moraine's not here. Can't help you there. But that's fine, because that's not who Leandrin wants to see.
So, you know, we've had a lot of internet discussion and speculation and debate about who in House Damodred, if anyone, is a dark friend. And now we learn. And the first time Barthanas gets commanding is when he dismisses his mother and says, okay, I what do we need to talk about? And Leandrin says, I'm to give you orders. And Barthanas is saying, oh, what does our master want? So everybody knows a Shamanil. So the order is to kill Moraine. And, if your mother finds out, kill her too.
Mm-hmm. Except it's, so I couldn't tell what she said. Remove her from the blank.
Board. I could not remove her from the board. Pretty sure it was that. like a chessboard, you know, remove a player from the
board. Oh, okay. That makes so much more sense. I was like, I was so confused what she was getting removed from. It was very confusing. Yeah. We learned that this house Damodred house, is extra fancy because mm-hmm. it has all sorts of little listening spots, mm-hmm. Including where Anver is listening.
As you yeah. absolutely, that was a detail that I really enjoyed mm-hmm. having there. If you are in a city that plays the game of houses the way Carrion does, of course you'd have a lot uh-huh. of little spy holes and
right?
listening devices and things mm-hmm. like that. So even if, you know, this episode is named Dice Damar, mm-hmm. the game of houses, the kind of politicking and maneuvering. And, you know, we don't really see much of that here, except maybe among the Aes Sedai. But certainly, at least we get a representation of that mm-hmm. through the architecture of Manor yes. Damodred.
Yeah, and one other thing is that Leandrin's alliance has shifted. She was recruited by Lanfear now.
And oh, you're right.
Uh-huh. Shamael is the one that said a dead Aes Sedai is no use, but a desperate Aes Sedai, you know, has her price or something like that. So it's not Shamael who wants Moraine dead. It's got to right. be Lanfear.
It's yeah.
You're right.
And this is yeah, this is what Lanfear is asking Leandrin to do.
Good catch. Good catch.
For sure. Yeah. Nice. Good call. So we now that Rand is talking to the Emirlin, Moraine left to go talk to Lan, and Lan is like, Moraine is pissed at Lan because of all of the secrets that he told. Mm-hmm. But Lan has a purpose. Let me just say, so last episode, Lan was very much the like punching bag of the episode. Mm-hmm. It was like boring and he was such a pushover and whatnot. This episode, he really has redeemed himself. In a very unexpected way.
Like, he's the detective of
yeah.
channeling somehow.
Figuring out these things. And I don't know why he thought that necessary. Like, why he, like, is following this along. But he's asking Moraine if she ever wanted to kill herself. Yeah.
Because according to my studies in the tower, only two women in history have not killed themselves in this state. That struck me as peculiar. So weird. So Lan is a different character here.
No. Well, yeah. In the book, he's like an onion. We've heard that.
Yes. Yeah. But it was just, it was so weird. And he's just like, okay, you have to trust somebody.
Yeah.
You can't do this yourself. If it's not going to be me, then I thought it might at least be her.
Yeah.
Which is
that sweet. At least was thematically, that resonated with me.
Yeah.
As a lamb thing. That yeah. he would do yeah. anything to get her back on track.
Yeah.
Because he cares for her.
Mm-hmm, very much so.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we learn Swan is just kind of grilling Rand and trying to figure out what the heck happened. Like, if you can't learn to control it, you will go mad, but you also shouldn't channel a whole lot.
But you gotta channel.
You gotta channel a little bit.
Yeah.
And Rand says, you know, what if I'm tired of being a spoke in the wheel? And Swan just kind of laughs. It's like, you aren't a spoke. You're the whole water that turns the wheel or dashes it to pieces. Like, that's like a really poignant part, is like, you have yeah. more control than you think.
Well, you have more influence than you think.
Yes.
Control? Yes. No, 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 no. You will not be our general. You are our weapon.
Yeah.
Yes. Because we're going to cage you.
Yeah.
And Rand is like, no, I won't live in your cage. And starts to channel, but with just a single snap, Swan like whoosh, pushes him against the wall or like
and shields
across
him, yeah.
the room. And immediately shields him and like binds him. and like a single Aes Sedai can handle you like you were bait fish. You would have been so much better off if you had been a girl.
Aww.
This is where I especially thought, okay, is she trying to push him in some direction? Is she trying to make him do something? Because, boy, she's being heavy-handed. She's not being... She's not trying to make friends with him.
Mm-hmm. No.
She is going to... She's telling him she's going to put him in a cage, and that's exactly what she does.
Yeah.
And, boy, if this is your savior... and this is your plan of dealing with your savior, you're not paying attention. And, you know, to be fair, she hasn't been able to pay attention. This is her first time meeting Rand.
Yeah.
You know, no talking to, well, she can't now, but no talking to Nynaeve and Egwene and saying, so tell me about this, this guy who, you were in the Two Rivers with, you know what?
Yep.
And well, we'll talk about the books later, but
yes,
Siouan comes into it with a lot less information than she should, and she kind of blusters her way through it, which
the information
kind of shocked
that
me.
She has is basically that Moraine has failed. Mm-hmm. Like, she was supposed to control him, and she can't even channel, so she can't even guide him. And she's like, he's no more ready now than he was before you found him. Mm-hmm. You left the fate of the world to chance for your pride.
Right.
And they're like, screw this. When the queen returns, we're going to announce him as the dragon and Kyrian with these sisters to show he's under our control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this would have been a great opportunity, I thought, and I wonder if it ended up in the cutting room floor somewhere, for them to have a conversation about what the wheel weaves as the wheel wills actually means, and whether you believe it. Because to me, that was Moraine's turning point, when Anavir, a couple of episodes ago, says, do you really need to protect him?
Yeah, is it
and true? She thinks for a long time. She's silent. The wheels are turning, and that's when she says, okay, Rand, we're gonna take a bold chance.
Yeah, go take a nap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go do it. I'm not gonna run around and shield you from your destiny because well, she doesn't say it outright, but this would have been a perfect chance. The cosmology of this world says that there is a fate, and that fate is a good fate, unless the Dark One's influence is too strong. And she's surrendering to that. Moraine seems to be saying, yeah, that's what we're going to do, and it's going to turn out okay. I just have to have faith. And Siouan is not doing that.
Yeah.
She's trying to keep control. Yeah. And it felt like a moment where they could have had a heart-to-heart. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It felt. I think that's why it felt so. This whole part felt so forced, and even more when we get to the Waygate, because there's no care in this. Mm. Like, there's no. The relationship that they had is completely gone. I get it. Siouan feels betrayed or like whatever, but like this, it just is, it just feels wrong.
Yeah. Well, I think Siouan's desperate. Moraine even reminds her that she has too many enemies in the tower.
Yeah.
And
she doesn't have her power cemented as closely as she thinks she does.
Yeah, definitely. And so I think how do you say this? So Moraine is willing to give up everything to guide Rand. And I think Siouan reaches that point as well. Now she's willing to do anything to guide Rand. And so she needs to get rid of Moraine because Moraine failed. So I don't agree that it was forced. I think I can see the character motivations here, just when you're lovers and you wanting two different things. And Siouan being the Almerlin can do what she wants. And like we see later, she's got Moraine sworn to her.
Yeah.
I just wish we had more development of that schism between the two of them, so we could put that contrast of, okay, we've mm-hmm. got a secret that plan that we've been working on together, but we've moved too far from each other and not kept in sync well enough.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, the time when they were meeting together last season in their little secret hut, you know, it was kind of devoted to showing that they were lovers, mm-hmm. but it didn't spend much time showing that they were also co-conspirators.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think the cold open was really important for, to show their lover status, but also to show their relationship, not just as lovers, but as Aes Sedai. And I think coming in and having this moment of, okay, well, let's, you know, this, these are your goals. This is what, you know, we have to separate and go do, and then we'll come back together. Mm-hmm. But then you're sitting in this part where Swan is just completely like missing the point, kind of just angry at the world and doesn't have the control that she's expecting. And is just going to force Rand to do mm-hmm. whatever she wants.
Yeah.
Well, and Siwan's plan here, which she states right out, is that, okay, Queen Galdrian's going to be back, and what we're going to do is we're going to declare Rand the dragon, and we're going to show that he's under our control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think your question was a good one, Maureen. Had they told her that there were Forsaken running around?
I think
Alana certainly knows this.
Yeah, I think we decided that yes, Lan told.
Yeah, told Siwan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but she's going to put on that kind of a display with a Forsaken nearby.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Probably not the best choice.
That feels crazy. Yeah, maybe that's the reason why you have 14 Aes Sedai with you, but
to get that extra power. But it's fine because Lanfear will just make the display.
That's the part that I loved. Are we there yet? Can we talk about Rand talking with Rand?
Okay.
Sorry, I've got one more thing. Prison? So about the cold open, where, you know, it shows Moraine and Siwan, and they're so much in love and they're so cute, and Moraine is a completely different person. And Alana said previously, like, to Lan, I wish you knew her from before. There was like a spark in her. And it vanished one day. And it's just really sad to see that cold open where she is. She's so bright and she's so bubbly and she's so hopeful. And then what she is now, I mean, it's so, so sad.
Yeah. It's absolutely heartbreaking. So Rand decides to take a nap. And because that's what you do. And,
well, when you're in prison,
when
you're in prison with your sword strapped on your back, one lady is guarding you, holding a shield.
So he needs to talk to Lanfear, and it's just like, hey, Lanfear's so disappointed in him. Like, you didn't even make it out of the city.
Well, and we should say that he's talking to Moraine about this, and so she's kind of helping him set it up. Says, well, oh, they want to do this to me? Well, you know the Forsaken aren't going to like that. And Moraine's like, right. Maybe take a nap now. Now we're back into Teleran Riod. There's no giant wheel, but there still is a throne and a fabulous outfit.
Yes.
And yeah.
And Lanfear is just kind of like, ugh, boys. but it works because Lanfear's going to come and help take care of things.
Oh, I do like it when you try to manipulate me.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. And so she's going to start setting fire to everything in the Foregate. And this outfit was incredible.
I loved it.
Dynamite.
This is the first Forsaken outfit that we've seen that hasn't been just black or white. It's all of the shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
There might be 50. I don't know. I didn't count.
For For me, Lanfear is the standout character, especially of this episode. Mm-hmm. Her rampage, her casual rampage, mm-hmm. like she's, you know,
yes.
walking through a high-end mall and setting fire to everything. Yeah. Just, you know, oh, 3,000 years and we're back to this. Mm. Blows up the door.
Yeah. Okay, that scene in particular, I have a question, like, for the editing, because it was a little bit weird, and I watched it a couple times, and I'm still not sure. Did they, like, duplicate the fire explosion things? Because it looked like there was an explosion and then another explosion.
It felt like there were two embedded gates, but I wasn't sure either.
Okay.
Like, two layers of gates.
I wasn't sure if it was that, or if they, like, doubled the scene, like they forgot to cut one or some, I don't know.
I think it was like a Michael Bay shooting this explosion from multiple angles.
Gotcha. Yep.
The only thing I didn't care for there is when they slow motioned Lanfear walking into the intersection. Like, you don't need to do that. She's doing
that's
just
so
fine.
Weird.
She's looking fabulous. Strange. She doesn't need to have that enhancement.
Especially when it's not a whole lot of it either. Like, you're not seeing a ton of that space. Like, you're not...
Right.
Just, like, 30 seconds, like, 3 seconds of her walking slow motion from behind. I don't know. It was weird. It was weird. But that's okay, because she's going to come and save the day. before that, we have another visitor, shall we say. So Maxim, instead of, while Ivan's following Tomas, Maxim is, you know, fixing his hair.
Yep.
Like you do in the knife. And Alana and Lan come in. And Maxim's like, hey, he's in there. And Lan leaves. And then Maxim is just like, so daughter of night, right? Like, she's here, like, forsaken. Dragon Reborn, I miss the farm, Alana. I even miss your cousins. And this, come on. Did you expect to fight the last battle against an army of kittens? I want a picture so badly of Maxim fighting an army of kittens. Bring so it on, Twitter of time.
Yes.
You have the power.
Yes.
Make this happen.
Oh my gosh, please. And then the way she kisses his forehead was just, like, so sweet, because we know that they've had some difficulties being together. And so that was just so affirming to, like, you know, they're making it work, and they are still...
She does care for him.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was nice. Nice touch.
Yeah. And we see who Maxim is guarding, and it's Loghain, who was playing a game of stones, and he sassy Loghain is like, I'd offer you a match, but stones is a gentleman's game. Like,
you're talking to a king. Ooh, dude.
I know, right?
Yeah, right.
I took offense to that.
Yeah. Clearly Lan didn't care, because, like, you know, Loghain's like, hey, I'm still waiting for your master to, like, fulfill her promise.
You can run me through with your sword. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, nope, instead I can give you a key. And he asks the important question that all of us have been asking.
So Lan is still in Columbo mode, and he is a scholar of the One Power, which he cannot see, but he's piecing it together. And right, he asks the question.
What do you see when you look at Moraine? And Loghain's like, no, I'm not going to answer. And Lan's like, okay, cool, I don't care. It starts to leave. And that game of chicken is lost by Loghain, because he says, there are weaves on her from a man. Thousands of strands holding into place, but nothing being channeled into them. Mm-hmm. And how does it happen? No one knows, but...
As Detective Lan noted in the previous episode, the Forsaken can do things that have been forgotten by the Aes Sedai of today. So, the wheels are turning. There's an aside that we should make. So, Sarah Nakamura, now that the strike is over, is answering questions on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. And... Yep. confirmed something here that we were all speculating about, which is that Loghain can see weaves because of his capital T talent. It's not that he's a main male channeler who can see weaves. Okay. Or because he sees them because of a separate talent that he has.
And so how?
And by extension, the women can't see each other's ability to channel either unless they have a similar talent, which is why they have that one Damani walking around and pointing fingers.
And that's her talent. Wow.
That is her talent. Okay. So
that makes sense. So
that's how it works.
But then, but anyone can see the actual weaves, and that's why Rand can break the knot.
Oh, that I don't know.
No, I think he's just guessing.
Well, let's get there. Let's get there at the Waygate. Cause...
So, oh no, there's fire. Fire. Blah, blah, blah. Lan has to go help and save the day. And Loghain's like, oh, but my key. And Lan's like, I remember what you did to Corinne and Stepan. So screw you. Mm-hmm. I'm taking my key and leaving. You can have it when you get taken to the tower and you get to be studied.
By two Brown Aja members in particular want to study you. And, you know, I think they're the ones who love booze. So maybe they can all have some Gildan and Red. And, just have a great time together.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound so bad.
So back into the main part of the city of Kyrian, Barthanas is fulfilling his obligation, or so he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Because he confirms that from the servant that, Moraine is alone and had a sedative. And Barthanas gets ready to go in and stab her, but just kidding, his mom's there. And it's just like, I didn't think you would do it, because she was going to give him the chance, the opportunity to, you know, protect herself and protect him. But nope, not anymore. And locks her son away. And, we find out why, you know, they've risen so far so fast. And, you know, this Moraine doesn't care about anyone. She's going to betray all of us. And Anver says, you know, I know, but there are two things that my sister understands beyond anything else. The difference between right and wrong, and how much harder it is sometimes to do what is right. Yeah. And that emotion is so... I felt it on both sides. Like, Barthanas feels bad that this is what he's chosen to do, but also that his mom betrayed him. And Anver just can't believe what she's had to do for her son, for her baby.
And also I'm sure there's got to be a little bit of that sadness, because she thinks she's the one that pulled Damodred together, and she thinks she's the one that repaired the house and has made it, you know, not not a disgrace anymore, but really it's just him dealing with the Dark One.
Yeah, I feel that too, Maureen. And I was wondering what you thought kind of the point of this sequence was, because, who's the dark friend here? Is there a dark friend here? That's all fine. But, I don't think it forwarded the plot all that much. Unless Moraine reconnects with her house and her sister, you know, in the next season, and that becomes a plot point. But maybe it really did undermine what we thought of as a normal person doing what she can to make things better. Didn't sell their soul to do it.
I don't think it necessarily undermines that. I think it goes to show that you can do what is right and continue to do all of the things that you're supposed to do, and you can still be screwed over by someone else who tried to go for the easy way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also the power that it takes to be with your family, like mm-hmm. choosing your family over all and being able mm-hmm. to come in and mm-hmm. be like, look, my son, you know, screwed up. And I know that my sister is not like, this is not good. And yet this is what is right.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that doing what is right is harder than, you know, doing what is easy.
Owning
this idea of, you know, there is good that can be found in anybody and being able to kind of make those choices mm-hmm. to do good.
It definitely establishes Ana Vera as a very principled character, principled to the point of locking up her own son
mm-hmm.
and publicly declaring he's a dark son.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, that's huge. So, mm-hmm. like, I'm hoping there is a future payoff for that.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I agree.
Where that sort of a principled character is the only one you can trust or something like that.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. And one other thing, you know, Leandrin has said every woman has her price. And I like that. Is it Anver? Alver? How do we say her name?
Anver.
Anver is showing that she's above that. And then also knowing Leandrin turned to the shadow to save her son. And then Anver's like, no, he made his choices.
Good.
Like, So we can see that. I mean, does it move forward the plot? No, but it is showing some things about the human characteristics in this world.
I didn't even latch onto that, and you're so right. Leandrin and Anver right now are being set up as points and counterpoints with their sons specifically. That's really good.
And how it affects Moraine, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is really... Yeah, that's... Wow.
Okay, I'm satisfied with this scene now.
Hooray!
You turned me around on it. Great.
Okay, so moving to the other side of Kyrian, we have a different sister having a different interaction with other sisters. Varen comes in and basically pulls this perfect Aes Sedai interaction, shall we say, with Lyanna Sedai, by going, the Emirlin requires your strength to protect Kyrian. I've been told to watch the boy. This is an order, Lyanna Sedai. I'll take his shield. All true.
All exactly. technically and, true. The best kind of true.
Exactly. And Moraine... after Leanne leaves, obviously disgruntled, not happy to go, in that fantastic coat, absolutely freaking gorgeous coat. I want that coat. Varen has the shield and transfers it over. Lyanna says, you know, don't let her get close to you, and then leaves. And then Moraine says, you're very clever with your words, sister. And then Varen drops the shield. And obviously Varen is ready to get him out of here, because, you know, I think you've spent enough time in Kyrian, haven't you? You know, being all sassy Varen, like we love. I love this moment of ultimate Aes Sedai-ness. I had a conversation with a couple other content creators who had seen screenings, was kind of like, ugh, I hate this part. Like, Varen lied. And I was like, no, she did not lie. These are all very accurate words, and like explaining, his thought process was kind of like, I'm not really sure, like what would have happened if Lyanna had, you know, followed up or like asked questions, and yes, she probably would have been able to manipulate, you know, the situation anyways, like, who told you to watch the boy? And like, you know,
where you just answer questions with questions. Do we have time for this? So, That kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Varen has been doing this for a very long time. She knows what she's doing. And she's managing the whole thing. So she's not lying and is owning the pure, you know, Aes Sedai-ness of it. And they are gonna leave the prison space to try and GTFO in the way that we know they have done before, through the waves, or not the waves,
the way gate.
Way gay,
The ways, the dark along the ways. So, yeah, it's we know now why Varen wanted a map, an Ogier map of the city, and the city has encompassed its grove and or has basically chopped down its grove, but the way gate that used to be there is still there. It's kind of interesting. That was a difference with the Tar Valon way gate, which, you know, was supposed to be in an Ogier Grove, was supposed to be in the city where they maintained their Ogier Grove, but instead it's out on a hill way outside of the city. You know, choice of settings, that's fine. But, you know, it's kind of contradicting its own lore just a tiny little bit.
I mean, not too much, because you know they do mention the Kyrian family built it up around it. They obviously cut down the great trees, but more importantly, this was a rumor. Moraine, who grew up in the city, was like, "This is a rumor," and you know, didn't realize that it did actually exist. And so the fact that that Yessica found the Ogier map and was able to, you know, a steal it from the Great Library and give it to Baron, you know, helped them find what they needed.
And everyone's game with this. Alana and her warders are there. Varen and Thomas are there. We don't exactly know what passed between Ivan and Thomas when he went to go follow him, but you know, they've reunited.
Or even where the heck he was.
They
I
went out. They
wonder.
went out for beers.
I
That's
think,
all that happened.
yeah, because like, there's no way he could have found the steading because he left before Varen even looked at the map. So like, what the heck? Where were they going? No one knows. No one's gonna ask. It's fine. We need to ask Greef. We need to find out. Or, you know,
it might
Probably
be
a cutting
revealed room
in the next
floor
episode. It might
episode.
be a plot
I heard,
point.
or I saw Rafe.
Oh, hidden scene
yeah
or
I saw
deleted
Rafe
scene.
said that there are deleted scenes, which is fun. And have you seen any deleted scenes in the past? I haven't
No,
either.
I
I would
haven't.
like
I
to
don't think
find
so.
those.
Let me, yeah, while live on the show, let's
We're
see
gonna go.
what
That's so
it
true.
says. Oh, I need to sign in to Amazon Prime.
Okay. Well, while we're talking, or while Kathy's handling that, I am going to point out that Jessica, remember, has that thing where she can draw. So I don't think she stole from the
Yes.
library. I bet you she just drew that map
That's
from
right. She's
memory.
got the eidetic memory.
That's a good. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know that
Yeah,
word.
we cuz she wouldn't steal from a library or disrupt a
I don't think she'd
collection. That would
steal.
be bad.
Yeah.
I think Baron would, but yeah,
Yes,
I don't think
exactly.
Jessica would.
Let's go back to the Carrion Waygate and
Back
yeah, we
to,
got our
yes. I found it really interesting that Alana and the warders are coming from Loghain, obviously, because, you know, that was where the fire was. And then no one else goes. So it's just Lan and Moiraine and Rand. And so they're all just gonna hang out and, you know, good luck. Like, why aren't they going? Or, unless they're here to like help protect the city,
I think that
maybe.
must be it. That's probably the most likely explanation is there is a Forsaken attack going on, and you know, we'll catch up with you. We gotta defend the city against this rampage that Lanfear's on. Mm-hmm. So I'll buy that.
That makes sense.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But we get down to finally the first bit of business that resolves some information that we were debating about and trying to figure out.
But before that, we got to hit the top of the tower, the top of the castle, because the next scene, as they're running away, you know, to give some time, we see the Marilyn with her Aes Sedai taking control of the situation, shall we say. And it says, link with me, and you see the way that a true, like, circle should work. They whip it all together, it looked like to me, water, air, and spirit to make it rain. And then Leanne comes up and is like, I'm here, mother.
Oh, yes.
And you get the look of, WTF, why are you here? Who the heck is shielding the boy? And Varen Sedai, you sent her. All right, never mind. Lead your sisters, heal the wounded. I gotta go, because obviously Swan knows something is going on. Something is up. Yeah, and that's the last we see of all of the big group of Aes Sedai. Which is fine. Hopefully we'll see them again in the future. Maybe not. I don't know. But you've got 14 Aes Sedai wandering around by themselves. That's fine. although technically 16, I mean, not counting Moraine, which would be 17. In the episode, the YouTube episode that Tom did on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/dragonmount, I think. He counted each of the Aes Sedai. So there's actually 14 Aes Sedai plus Leanne plus Swan plus Moraine. Mm-hmm. So there's 17 that are hanging out. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they're like, oh, we brought, you know, we have 14 Aes Sedai, but there's
and
more
than
14.
And then a few others showed up.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so I don't know. That's interesting. But yes, now,
okay. Now, should we talk about the fruits of Lan's one power detective work?
So, yes.
One, he knows that the Forsaken are capable of things that that Aes Sedai these days have forgotten. Two, he knows that there's still some sort of a bond between him and Moiraine, whether it's fuzzed or masked, but it still exists. And three, he knows that she's not suicidal, and that's statistically very improbable. And four, of course, he's gotten the information from Loghain that there is a male weave on her. Nobody is challenging thousands of male threads, but no one is actively channeling them. They're just there. So this is something, and you know, we don't need to do a spoiler for the books on this, but this is something that deviates a little bit. The idea of tying off a weave and keeping it maintained is something that is unknown in the show. While in the books, they do know how to do that. So I think book readers were kind of surprised there, because this was the information that you can tie off a weave and have it maintain itself is new information. Yeah. It's something that nobody knows that, nobody in this age knows is possible.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they need to make the Forsaken a little bit more intimidating or, you know, baddies, you know, and if they know the Aes Sedai, current Aes Sedai know everything the Forsaken know, then, like, you know, it's not as a big of a contrast. It's not as exciting.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So I don't mind that. Change.
There's a reason
just,
for
like,
it. Absolutely. It's just a piece of the mystery that probably people who know more about the books would be led down a false path. So.
Yes. Yes, well, it worked well, because you now see Rand is pulling together. He pulls out fire and spirit, it looked like. And it's the visual between him channeling and all of the women channeling, even when the women are channeling
through a circle.
Angry, aggressive battle weaves. The rage in the male channeling is so vibrant and physical that I really liked that. And then you have this little knife, like he manages to pour it all into this little thing and just go boop like a snake.
What was funny is now Lan is teaching him how to channel. Said, "Oh no, you could never unravel that weave. So you're just gonna have to cut it." Oh, really? Where'd you learn that? Okay. But that's his advice on something that he can't see. And Rand does it, of course. He creates the knife, he slashes the weave, and Moraine is free. She is able to channel. I couldn't hear, and I don't have subtitles on the screeners. Did Moraine thank Lan? Did that happen?
Lan, no. I think she's thanked Rand.
Oh, I thought she whispered something to Lan. I wanted her to show a little gratitude. I think she did.
I think she did.
We'll wait for you.
Now that we have the actual things, like the actual episode, I can turn on the subtitles. Let's see. Oh, look. Let's go back and fact check. Okay, so she just says thank you, not specifically to anybody. And that, after that is where Lan says, I'm sorry it took me so long to do my duty. So it seems.
I'll just roll with it. Also, Lan says something very interesting, and this becomes important, just a few beats later in the episode. But not even a Forsaken could still you alone. That's, you know, not to spoil book stuff, but that's another change.
So, hey, you're talking too much about the books. Yeah. You got to hold off. Let's get back. It's interesting because, previously when Swan and had Rand with her, was talking about how, one Aes Sedai could handle him, but didn't say anything about stilling. And so I think that's interesting, and we'll see, kind of how this works around, like what it really means, I think. But yeah, it's
stilling is something that takes a lot of
detective
power.
And Mr. Detective Lan, I'm trying to think of like Sherlan Holmes.
Oh boy.
Is the thing. Maybe we'll go with that. He's done.
I liked Columbo better.
Perrin's Columbo to me, but
Perrin's Columbo. Okay, I'm sorry, I got it mixed up.
But either way, let's open the waygate. And just when we think it's all going to be fine, here comes Swan out of the shadows, and pushes Lan out of the way and does the magic. Yeah, and does, I don't know, like this magic, like shielding, tying, like bonding, tie up move. Like the choreography in that just feels really cool. I don't know what it is, but like it's some combination of the movement, the positioning, and the sound. Like the Foley work with it, that just feels right. That there is this weave that will do all of these things at once, and you just kind of like, bam, do it.
No, wait. Are you saying that Siwon tied off her weave on Rand? Oh, okay.
No.
You're just talking in general, how they're just representing it.
In general, like that push, that like the Yeah. Moving yes. it.
Well, these are expert these are expert term. Channelers who are capable of doing a bunch of things at once. And that's yep. So yeah. dividing yep. the flows. Actually, that's something yes. that that Alana was trying to teach at the beginning in the White Tower, because you had to divide yes. the flows to purify the water. So definitely yep. we see that.
And then Swan uses the bond that and the oath that was placed on the oath rod to get Moraine to close the waygate that she just
that
opened.
Was a vicious scene.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was very heartbreaking. And
especially where Moraine's like, if you've ever loved me, like, don't let
me. It's so emblematic that all trust is lost between these two. They are just, and you know, then you get the flashback montage to when we were young and in love, and now you're betraying me and all of that. It's jarring.
But Suan's not wrong, right? I mean, Moraine's fumbled it. Moraine almost lost the dragon. Moraine's like doesn't have a plan, as we've established. Suan's not in the wrong. It's just heartbreaking that they had to come to this point. Well, like they couldn't communicate more.
Yeah, and how they did it. The fact that she had to use the flipping oath to like force it. In.
I mean, this is not how friends, much less lovers, negotiate things.
But at the same time, Moraine's given so much for Rand, and Suan thinks she's doing the same thing. Right. She's like, I'm doing this for the world. I'm doing this. Like, it's bigger than the two of them.
Yeah,
and it's just, it's so painful. And the acting that Rosamund does, I mean, we've said it a million times. She's an incredible actor, but the way she moved while being under compulsion was just incredible. You could tell that it like the power, like the control under that, and it was
she was definitely amazing. Being compelled to do something, not doing it willingly, not acceding to it. It was being forced.
Yeah.
And so that's all well and good, but then yet another person arrives.
Right. What's with the shadows? Come on, like sneaking around. Yeah. Here comes Lanfear. Ready to save the day, because even though Rand got out of jail, Lanfear still is going to save him again. So, like, he asked for help getting out of prison, but he's already out of prison, and so Lanfear's like, oh, well, okay. Here, I'll just, transfer this. And Swan tries to... here's Swan, the frickin' Amirlin seat, and she's going to, spread her super ice sword crown and just hold it there. Of course Lanfear is going to knock her over. What the heck?
I mean, the crown of air daggers was such a badass look. And I think this so is cool. where, you get to sort of show how far above Lanfear is to Siwan. She just kind of bats it away, and just simultaneously again, bats it away, flings her to the ground, and shields her, we think, because remember what Lan just said, a Forsaken cannot sever you, cannot still you by his or herself. And we believe Lamb because he knows a lot about the One Power.
He's done a lot of research.
he's current on these things. He reads the journals. And so we believe him. And so, later on, Lanfear refers to C1 as a broken Ammerlin. So Ishamael thought that a desperate Aes Sedai was useful. Lanfear thinks a broken Ammerlin is useful. So do we think mm-hmm. that she's shielded and tied off in a way that people won't know how, or the normal Aes Sedai won't know how to counteract?
Oh, maybe. Or she's broken because she got her ass handed to her and now Rand is going away.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to be shielded like Moraine. I don't think they've repeat that plot line so soon.
Yeah.
Okay. I think
she's just
broken is is a strong word though. I think it's shifted status.
I mean, she got her stuff handed to her, like got taken care of, basically, shall we say, mm-hmm. Managed mm-hmm. and whatnot. And I think that's why.
And then Moraine also implied that there's lots of enemies she has at the tower. How divided it is, but it could also be a little bit.
We can talk about this in the book section, but. So this is interesting. So Lanfear leads Rand, Lan, and Moraine.
Well, real quick though, Rand steps in between Lanfear and Moraine and protects her.
Right.
Because again, remember Lanfear said, you know, next time I see you,
There were a lot of people online speculating that because she whispered something in Rand's ear that Rand was lying to Moraine. And people were speculating that maybe that wasn't her condition. That was kind of Rand's way of getting away from Moraine. But I think we have confirmation now that Lanfear indeed said, that's my condition. If I see her again, I'm going to kill her. And Rand steps in front of her, says no. And, you know, Lanfear is accommodating of this.
And it's just like, oh, every day you're becoming more
and
like
she loves Luz. That yeah
yes she wants her Luz back, and so it's gonna kind of play this game,
like, and I think, you know, so they all enter the ways together, meaning Randlin and Moraine, led by Lanfear. And presumably they're going to Falm. And so really, she and Ishamael so far are not working cross purposes. Lanfear also wants him to go to Falm. And we know that the reason they want him to go to Falm is because they want him to proclaim himself the Dragon Reborn. So Lanfear wants her Luz Theron back. So a man of status, a man of who's, you know, leading the world, basically. And Ishamael, we know, wants to turn the dragon to the dark. He said as much to Lanfear. I think they are aligned up until whatever happens next happens. At that point, we get to see whether their motives diverge.
I find it really interesting to kind of see where this is gonna go and how Lanfear is going to manipulate the situation, because we know she's got a plan. She doesn't do anything without, you know, purpose.
Am liking Lanfear more and more every episode. I know that she's got some bad intentions, or I think I know that she's got something bad. we are assuming that, but if you look at all of her actions, all of her reactions, they've been kind of dramatic and over the top and all of that kind of stuff, but she has been Rand's best ally so far. And, you know,
she's helped Rand more than flipping.
She's kind of the anti-hero here, but not the villain so far. She's helping Rand, and she's helping Rand do what Rand wants to do. You know, what happens after that, we'll see. But, yeah, she's been useful, and she's been nurturing of Rand. Mm-hmm. She's given him good advice. Yeah. She's comforted him. She's made him feel like he's not alone. He's not a monster. You know, I'm team Lanfear right now.
I don't know if there's a redemption arc available. It might be hers.
Probably not. But
I doubt it. But yeah, we'll see. We shall see. Okay, so I think that's the full episode.
Yeah. More thing. When Suwan's on the ground and she's like, "Moraine, please," or something like that. That was just so heartbreaking.
Yeah. Oh.
Like, there's no way to prepare that right now.
Yeah. And that's a deep, deep betrayal.
It is. Yeah. And it's... I get that, you know, lovers to rivals or lovers to enemies is an arc. I wasn't sold on how it was developed. Like we said earlier, I think I wanted more understanding of why that schism developed. And to me, it felt really abrupt. It's like when they last left each other, they were allies. They were in this together, absolutely. And that was reinforced with, you know, the flashbacks. The first time they get together, it's all broken down. And there's no talking at all about it. There's no discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, though, because it's been 20 years. And B, here's Swan, who's done her duty. She's the Emirlin. She's in charge. She's, you know, ready to take the control that needs to be taken. And Moraine lied through omission, did not tell her, like, the truth of what the heck was going on. And basically, like, this plan that they had was ruined because Moraine didn't keep updated, like, wasn't able to, like, do what she was supposed to be doing.
What was she supposed to be doing?
And that, to train Rand so that he had control, so that he had the power. And she tried kind of with Loghain, but not really. I mean, there were a lot of steps in there that, because of Moraine's, like, trauma around being what we now know is shielded, she did not contribute as much as needed to happen.
The thing is, Suwan blamed her for failing at the Eye of the World. And, you know, they both went out. You know, the last time they met was before Moraine took Rand to the Eye of the World. And they were on the same page. And, you know, we talked about this last season. Moraine's whole premise was, you don't really need skill, you just need power. And Loghain said the same thing. And Lan sort of said the same thing. You don't need to have the skill to unweave this thing. Just cut it. You know, use your power. You are strong. And
Raina said it too to Nynaeve.
Everybody is echoing this idea that you don't need training if you're that strong. And the reason he failed, Rand failed, is not only did he not have skill and know-how in what he was doing, but they were just tricked. And Siwan would have done the same thing. And I just think Siwan's position is completely unfair here. They didn't really have a plan in one way or another.
Without a doubt. Like, you're not wrong in that this was completely irresponsible for Swan to have reacted. But I think it was developed the way that made sense. Like, it worked, and I can see why Swan is mad, and it kind of adds some humanity to the Ymirlin and like this type of stuff, but it's unfortunate. So it'll be really interesting to see if this relationship grows and changes.
I mean, it's pivoted already so much. I don't know what heals it. I think in the fullness of, you know, however many seasons we get, hopefully a full eight or whatever it is, you know, we could see that reconciliation. But to me, this was rushed, and it was rushed in a way that it just feels so broken that I don't know that there's anything, any way of coming back to it. But we'll see.
Yeah.
There's always hope, right?
Yeah. Well, it comes back to why Moraine let Rand go at the Eye of the World. And like Kathy just said, it was that trauma of being what she thought was stilled. You know, so she wasn't thinking clearly. I mean, and I don't think it's necessarily wrong for Suwan to be upset about that. I agree with you that I think Suwan's in the wrong on this, but in her own mind, I think the steps she's taking are logical and make sense. And like in her brain, like this is what she has to do to save the world, because Moraine's just fumbling it.
You know, Moraine also pointed out something. Siwan really hasn't completed her mission either. She's on shaky ground. There are people like Leandrin trying to undermine her.
Yeah.
And apparently there are lots of sitters who are willing to do the same. You know, we heard Leandrin's conversation with both Shuriam and with Liam, saying, hey, you're going to fall. So, you know, I think both of them have just kind of spectacularly botched this whole mission with the Dragon Reborn.
Yes.
That's all right.
That's okay.
You need to have plans that go awry in order to have some fun drama.
Yep.
Okay, Kathy, will you sound the horn of?
Yes, let's sound the spoiler horn of Valyr, which I cannot believe it's taken so long to call it that. But you know what? That's fine. Forgive me. I am handing in my Wheel of Time fan card. Clearly, because I don't deserve it, except just kidding. So this, we are now going to be talking full spoilers in the books all the way through A Memory of Light, possibly. I mean, the option is there. Yeah, get to it. So if you would like, you can skip this chapter, and we'll see you in the next episode. When we talk about
the finale.
The finale. Oh, no, I don't want it to be over.
Oh my goodness. But until then, let's talk about the book. And shall we start with the storytelling done by Hayley Mills, the original Parent Trap.
I did not realize that. Okay. And it is pronounced Guitarra Moroso, so we have a hard G. Didn't know that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just like GIF.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's not get into that argument.
I know. I'm sorry. Rajiv made the Twitter post and it put out that was
GIF
really funny.
Or GIF. All right. So I thought there were some interesting deviations that happened that kind of made the plot a little more urgent. And one is the Ymirlin isn't present here, so we don't even know if the Ymirlin knows about, you know, the Ymirlin at the time. Was that Tamra Espeña or someone else?
Tamra, I think so.
Because before there was a, you know, obviously, in the books, Moraine and Siwan were accepted. They weren't full Aes Sedai yet. And what happened was the Ymirlin was mobilizing her most trusted cadre to
go seek the Dragon Reborn, and all of that cadre was basically killed off by the Black Aja, who took Tamra aside, squeezed her for information, murdered her, and then went after all of her cronies.
And left her...
As they called it.
Yeah.
And nobody, of course, suspected to accepted. And that's how it felt. The mission fell into their lap. You know, right now we basically cut all of that history out. And we said, Gitara says, this is happening now. You don't have to figure it out from the weather patterns. And tell no one, my sisters. So... she's not even saying go to the Ammerlin here. She's saying it's all on you two.
She knows, which is rough. But I do like how they did it. It makes it so much easier. In the books, because that was a really complicated plot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To throw in there, and I think it's really smart to kind of just cut all of that out, have it just be the two sisters, and they have to try and figure out what the heck they're gonna do, which again kind of makes sense as to why this whole situation is a little bit
iffy, it does a couple things, right? Mm-hmm. It puts the mission on them very squarely, and it isolates them from any help. Gitara could have basically assumed that they would know to only share this with people they trust. She was dying, so she couldn't say, well, the Red Aja will probably want to gentle him, and there may be Black Aja in here, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of reasons not to trust, and she couldn't spill all of that while she was dying there.
But also, there's a level of course they're going to freaking understand, don't. Trust the Red Aja.
But they're new. They're new, basically. And
but you don't have to be real new to understand that the Red Aja is
what I'm saying is they're new enough that they don't know who they can trust.
The individuals. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which makes more sense as to why they are just not trusting anybody. Yeah. It's just the two of them to kind of sit and try and get it figured out.
Go ahead.
And
Please.
Sorry, can I? Yes. Okay. So this was so underwhelming for me, and I don't know if you guys feel the same way. But just Gitara's foretelling, and how in the book. I mean, and I don't know if you've seen the graphic novel novels for New Spring, but she's shaking or convulsing and screaming . The dragon takes his first breaths on the slopes of Dragon Mountain, and he breathes, or something like the thunder. I don't even know. So I was expecting this big dramatic, something is strong enough to kill her. Instead, she's like, oh yeah, he's breathing. He's there. I can see him. Don't tell anybody. I'm dead. So it wasn't as big and bold as it should have been. And I'm going to akin it to, Machin Shin in, season one, where it was you're the Dragon Reborn, Rand, instead of the really creepy blood to sweep, blood to tear the skin, and so these things that are, I don't know, I was disappointed.
It certainly played out more dramatically in my mind before set.
I can definitely see that. I can also see why they couldn't have her completely lose her everything. Because she has to be the one to tell them what to do, go forth and find them, basically, because you don't have the Ammerlin there to give the power to these accepted. So, you have to kind of make those balances. But I agree. I wish that, it had been specifically the very last little bit of those moments kind of coming in and saying, this is why she's dying, not just, okay, I'm done.
Right.
Yeah, I can see that.
Croak.
Yeah.
Like, there was a list of reasons women have died in, like, past novels, and somebody said the word yes too loud. And have you seen that online? It was, like, really funny. Just how women die. Oh, the dragons are born. Okay, I'll die.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Oh, goodness, yeah. Well, that's okay, though, because we did get the cat crosses the courtyard.
Mm-hmm. That's
that
awesome.
We wanted, and we got that moment of, you know, Lan and Rand, that moment of mentoring that we didn't really get in the rest of the show. Like, we never had that connection in the books that they had because of training sword forms and that sort of thing. And so I thought this was a really, like, it felt right. Mm-hmm. That this moment is coming here and they're having this conversation, and Lan is like, this is what Lan would do, kind of, to kind of to get it to work. And so I'm really happy that we got it. And it was described a little bit better for the non-book readers so that they knew what Cat Crosses the Courtyard / this why we're excited for it type of a thing. So I like how they gave that description so that you had you're including everybody that's watching.
I'll agree to disagree here, because to me this was the underwhelming scene for me. And because it was
interesting.
That scene had such resonance for me when I read it, because it was the culmination of a real mentorship. Like, Lan has been teaching him all sorts of things. It's, you know, and how to fight, how to carry yourself, how to be an honorable person. And here it felt like it was just sort of, they haven't seen each other for a long time. They haven't interacted much. Here's a little bit of advice. Oh, you don't really need the advice because you already know this stuff. It didn't hit for me.
I don't think he already knew
He knew how to. He knew the forms.
Yeah, but he didn't know how to deal with the Emirlin.
But like, that didn't come as a product of a relationship. That came as a 11th hour, I'm taking you to the Emirlin. She's a smart woman. She has, she came from humbler beginnings than you, and you're going to face her. But by the way, face it on your feet. You got to do that. Wear a nice coat and go ahead and, you know, the advice came from a different place for me in the show than it did from the book, just because there was more build up to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, for sure. Yeah, I can see.
Miss that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Miss that mentorship.
Yeah. Although I am excited to kind of see the possibility of maybe getting a little bit of that mentorship in the future.
Well, this is where we were speculating. Well, you know, back in the beginning of the season, Lan wasn't training Rand. And we know from the previews that Blademaster High Lord Turok is taking out his sword and is getting ready to fight someone. In the books, it's Rand. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Rand's ready what's his name? Errol's training. So I wonder if it'll have to be Lan at this point.
I don't. It may be. Or, you know, it is going to be Rand, and he's got, you know, the Dark One's own luck.
Or he flat out channels.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's Harrison Ford pulling a gun to find out. Swordsman, right?
Right?
Right, yes, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, well, we might have like a sort of training montage in the ways.
Supervised by Lanfear.
Like standing up on the little... Right, yeah. Like the Karate Kid moment where he's standing up on the the edge of the ways where he's balanced and not going to fall off.
Maybe.
I think we're going to just... I think Much and Shin is no longer part of the Ways for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
Although Lanfear would well, probably be. Okay,
I mean, yeah, Lanfear's there. He's not going to, or it, they, it's Much and Shin it. Is not going to mess so, with the Forsaken. Yeah. Yeah.
That's immaterial. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out next episode. I'm very excited to see.
But also on that same note, someone has to teach Rand sheathing the sword. So I mean, Rand's gonna have to, don't you think?
If that's a thing, if that's even going to be, you know, a plot point. Because it's entirely possible that
he gets a wound in his side, there's even money that I have that Matt gives it to him with Min's viewing. Maybe for reasons that are not yet revealed, but.
Maybe for a little bit, have it be a little bit different. Yeah. I don't know.
We'll find out.
Take a drink every time I say that.
let's talk Barthamas for a bit. You know, he was a dark friend in the book. So I think a lot of people were guessing that he would be one in the show, and indeed was. He didn't really do much, though. He basically said, well, I just got a message, a very peculiar message from a guy I wasn't expecting, put on Fane. And he says, I should let you go, go ahead and go to Falm with my waygate. So go for it. So we still had Barthanas being a dark friend. But, you know, he didn't quite serve the same purpose. Something that I thought was interesting, though, is Rafe was doing a Q&A on Twitter, Rafe Judkins, the showrunner. And he said something about Anvir being a very important character and the one he's most excited about, the new a new character with an arc that's meant to be explored. So, you know, Barthanas, we talked about this earlier in this episode, in fact. He shows what Anvir is made of. And Maureen, you drew an excellent comparison between her and Lanfear, and how they are or are not willing to do things for their sons that you know, serve the greater good. So I think Barthanas being a dark friend is going to pay off maybe in next season, season 3, specifically with Anvir. And I love that because that means probably Moraine is going to have more interactions with her sister. And those interactions have been golden in this.
It's been amazing. Honestly, I think Rafe was talking about this episode.
Okay.
I think he was talking about her development of, you know, imprisoning her son and sending him to, like, this jail and, like, having that control taken over in... Even knowing that that's why the Damodred house was getting better and why he was going to marry the queen and all of that, like, I honestly, I doubt we will see. I don't know if we'll see them again. It would not surprise me if this was the end of Anvir and Barthanas in the story.
Yeah, and that would be too bad, because I was thinking that they might lead to the unrest in Carrion. I know part of it is the Aiel when the Shaido come and sack it. But even before that, there's Galdrian, King Galdrian in the books is dead. And so there's Daes Daemar, you know, the title of this episode. Everybody squabbling for the throne. And so if Barthanas comes out as a dark friend, maybe then they're going to think the queen's a dark friend. Maybe they're going to think... Everyone's, I mean, it might
triggers,
just start off this dark friend
civil war of some
hunt.
Sort, too. And that's something they'll have to deal with.
I think any of those options are possible, and I think it would probably happen in the future. I doubt we'll see it in
this season.
In this season.
Oh, yeah, no way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it would also be easy to have things happen off screen.
Yep.
To mm-hmm. make it That's effect. A good point. Because you have developed this, the interactions and all of that. And we'll see. Again, we shall see. Golly, swear. I don't mean to say it so many times.
Shall we talk then about Moraine and Siwon and their alliance and how it broke here? So,
okay.
In the books, they did not have a break, but they weren't. They were close. They were confidants. They were friends, and they were, you know, dorm lovers. But they didn't. You know, they weren't thinking of running off together and, you know, being married. Yeah, yeah.
Being a fish wife.
Yeah.
That we know. That we know. It was never stated in the books
because this happened when they were accepted. They hadn't started talking about those choices
Absolutely.
Yet. The future, yeah. And
that's
so
that's a good point. They were young,
yeah. And they the whole foretelling and stuff happens
before they're even raised. So
before that, before they're raised. So their goals for the future, like their future purpose, obviously
it's been set, pretty early in the books.
Yeah,
and I'm interested in the fracturing of this alliance in the show, because that didn't happen in the books, and I'm wondering how they're going to play it, because now these two are enemies, possibly working at cross purposes, and.
Well, don't forget though, in the books they were seen as enemies too, and that was a planned
they
situation
were perceived as that.
To get them. Yeah, so it might be interesting to see if this is something that they end up having planned.
Well, probably we were not. Speculating about that before. I think their disagreements have been too private, and using that compulsion technique, I think, crosses a line that you just cannot do. And you know, we've seen now how the Damani are treated. This wasn't much different, and having that juxtaposition there, I think, gives you a visceral reaction of, oh no, this is completely taboo. This is something that should not happen. You don't come back from this. At least that's the impression I got, just seeing episodes 6 and 7 so close to each other. But, you know, now we have a thing where the tower wants to control Rand, like shield him, bring him out as a weapon, fight the last battle that way. And then we have Moraine, who's hasn't said it yet, but is basically saying the wheel is weaving this pattern. We haven't heard the word Taverin since season 1, but, Rand is a thread that is going to guide the weaving, and what is supposed to happen is going to happen until, you know, the Dark One intervenes through his proxies. So, so we have almost a religious difference here between Siwon and Moraine. Do you trust the wheel, or do you try to control?
Yeah, well, it's a difference between embracing Sidar and surrendering to it, and forcing Sidin to do your bidding. Moraine is learning, oh, I need to go with the river. I need to let go. I need it to do what it needs to do. But Siwon's holding on and trying to force it.
Yeah.
Definitely. So we'll see how that conflict manifests. I mean, we know that there is going to be a schism in the tower. What the fracture lines are there, I'm not sure yet. And
that'll be interesting. But you've definitely seen the seeds of unrest have been laid out, including with the search for the end of thing.
Yeah.
Search for the Black Aja.
Yeah, Viren's already kicked that off marvelously. And I hope we get the room to see that, because that was one of my favorite sequences of the books. It's just how misunderstandings lead to the right outcomes. And it's so cool. But I think let's continue with Moraine and Siouan for a little bit. And Siouan's situation right now, you know, Lanfear calls her a broken Amyrlin, and she's lying on the ground there, presumably shielded or something, or tied up.
Tied up, maybe.
You know, when I saw that image, to me, it recalled the image after the tower coup when Siouan is lying on the ground and she's been stilled. So I wonder if, like, this has already happened where Siouan is being taken off of the board. There's a power vacuum. Maybe that's why Elaida gets summoned to the White Tower saying, we can't have an Amyrlin who can't channel. We need, and someone who's totally bungled the Dragon Reborn. Let's get you. Now we have the second worst possible outcome, which is the Red Aja in control of the tower. And yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They're going to want Rand in a cage.
No, that's a really good option. I think that could, specifically, like, even if Siouan isn't shielded and is, like, technically fine, the broken part comes from, you know, basically getting your ass kicked by Lanfear, and letting the Dragon Reborn escape, and letting Lanfear escape, letting a flipping, you know, Forsaken get away. I could see that being the purposing for
And Liandrin's going to spin this every which way to her advantage to make sure that, So I think we're setting up. I think we've seen basically how power changes hands already in the White Tower. We're not going to necessarily have a coup. We're going to have just a replacement of the broken Amyrlin.
Yeah. So she comes back and they're like, "Hey, here's your trial. These are your crimes. Get out."
Little book detail I wanted to just point out or raise is it's probably just an Easter egg, really, for the book readers. Ishamael is mysteriously whittling when he comes to visit Rand, and he's carving a figurine. And this kind of echoes the first book, where he's got these clay figurines of the three Two Rivers lads.
You know,
they're starting to take shape. They start out crude. One becomes more like, oh, he's got a wolf by him. Oh, one's got a little dagger, and one is the dragon. And I think that was just a little call out to the book saying, we got that.
I could see that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think he was actually whittling because it's like a root. So he's just breaking up the
was
root
that for the tea?
To put it in for the tea. Yeah, because it was in the like cup. So the teapot was just the water, and then the because you're steeping it with the hot water. So I think that could be.
I think it's still a little just a nod, but
You know what? Yes, I will definitely, like, I didn't even think about that, so I will absolutely give that to you. But yeah, he wasn't making a carving. I think he was getting
But let's talk about that tea then. So instead of Ilfin, we have tea? Is that how Matt guesses?
Again, underwhelming?
I'm trying to remember what I saw. Rafe made a comment about Finn's. I think they're going to combine it. I think we will get possibly the other. So one or both of them combined, I think we'll get mm-hmm. some of uh-huh. this pass through, especially if we're going to have, you know, Moraine and Lanfear fighting whatever, and they disappear slash die. Mm-hmm. Possibly in the Waste, in Ruidian, you know, like this whole situation might happen still. And I think we might get them the same one, like just have them combined somehow or some different, like maybe instead of snakes or foxes, they're
yeah, bears. I saw that.
You know, the executives right. can finally get their bears in the show. Something like that might happen that will then give those plot points with the eye, well, not the eye yet, but with the memories, with the Ashendari.
The Ashendari, yeah
all of those pieces, and the hanging.
Which is foreshadowing. Which we saw. Right.
We saw.
Unless that, but was that the past, well, or was that the future?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, because we do, when we see those mirror images that we're presuming to be Matt's other lives, they are different people, and then they kind of shift and turn into the Matt we know. And I really wanted Barney to be one of those images, but no, apparently not. I think that hanging man who did not change his face, it was always the Matt we know, is probably a bit mm-hmm. of foreshadowing. And we know that basically the Aelfin hanged Matt from Avendoral Dera, the clipping from Avendessera.
Avendessora. Avendadoral Dera.
Yeah, but isn't that the tree that's saplings. In Ruidian? Or is that Avendessera?
That one's Avendessora.
Right. You're absolutely
right. It's actual,
right.
That's okay.
The original Chora tree. So they hang him from that tree. And it's sort of a callback to mythological Odin hanging himself from the world tree. I can't even pronounce that, but from the world tree to gain wisdom. He also sacrifices his eye, which we know that Matt does in the books. So where are we going with all of this? I don't know if it's going to be the same thing. I think it's going to be Matt maybe being hanged for a crime. Maybe being hanged for a crime that he... Well, no. I hope it's not next episode. But
oh, yeah. I doubt it will be. Because
I want Captain Horatio Hornblower. Yeah. But, I think they're going to do... They're going to use that image, but they're going to do it something different.
Yeah, I think this was enough of a like a foreshadowing event that it won't pay off next episode. I think it's going to be like the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Or like sometime in season 2.
So both of you, Maureen and Kathy, you think that we're going to see some kind of fin creature, fairy folk, and this isn't going to be the sole way that Matt gets memories of all of his lifetimes?
Well, Shamael is the father of lies, so he wanted to show Matt what he wanted Matt to see. I think there'll still be more.
I think this was an ode to that moment without
also a flicker being... moment, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. Get throwing that flicker, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah, it was fine.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point, because that's what kind of really changes him is he's like, Rand, I'd never turn you in, because he saw himself do so many bad things.
Yeah.
So it wasn't his past lives he saw. It was
alternate future
options.
And that's why this is something I'm hoping for. And I don't know if we've sailed past it yet, but I want Matt to be so disturbed by what he saw that he says, that can't be all it is. He drinks the whole pot of tea. Ishmael was very specific. One pot or one cup, only 15 minutes, no more. And that's what opens up all of Matt's memories. And he says, hey, I have choices here. I've done good things. I've done bad things.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Yeah, maybe. I don't. But
I don't think it's going to happen now. But yeah, that's what I was expecting when he was there. And he's like, oh, there's nothing happening. I was like, oh, my God, he's going to drink the whole thing. And then all his memories are going to be from his past lives. And it's going to be awesome. And then it was like the opposite.
I think
of
he's going to go back to the well. But we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he is in Falm, so he doesn't need to travel too far.
That's true.
To do what he needs to do. Yep. All right, so we talked a little bit about the tying off of the weaves, and then I basically told you to stop talking because there's too much from the books. So now you can discuss it, and I think it's interesting, kind of like we have the added little bit about the fact that, you know, you can stab a Forsaken and they're not going to die type of a situation. So having this tie off the weaves being a new thing. Also the idea of not having the bracelet and collar for the Soldam and Damani being
physically
connected.
They don't have to be physically connected.
Yeah.
Which in the books is something that Elaine puzzled out. She said, yeah, I don't think we need this part. We can just, it works this way. And I like that she was already tinkering with this device. So.
Getting those tinkerings in, but yeah, I think I think the tying off it was an interesting choice to have it be a, like, this is the things that, like, this is something that normal people don't know about, and an easy thing for the Forsaken to have.
And Maureen, you were saying that, you know, the Forsaken needed to have something that distinguished them, and this was one of the things.
Yeah, we need to beef them up a little.
What I was thinking, though, is, and we may still see this because Lanfear is keeping her secrets of how she got Matt to Falm, but, you know, traveling would have been the obvious choice for me. About something that only the Forsaken do, and they don't want anybody to see those weaves, because that's a big advantage.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I was why didn't they just travel again? But
that raises the question: what about inverting weaves? Is that going to be a thing where you can channel without you seeing that?
I don't think they'll make it that. Yeah, that's too complex. Not unless they extended 5 more seasons after the original 8.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, we shall see.
Won't see. But they're inverted. All right.
Oh, nice.
Is there anything is there anything worth mentioning from the books about Avienda, Bane, and Shad? We got a lot more Gia Toe there. They're really explaining it to us. Nice. So it's going to be important.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love. I love that they're filling that out easily, especially since I'm pretty sure season 3 will be, you know, centered around a lot of the Aiel Waste stories and
right
there. So I like the foundation that they're laying for the Aiel and for this complex societies and cultures in a way that, like, we learned in the books, really, you know, everyone else is just like, oh my gosh, the Aiel are so weird. Like, we're definitely seeing that with the, you know, beating up.
Why are you doing this? Avi well, took, as you know, Bob. Mm-hmm.
It's
nicely it's nicely explained, and it's situationally explained, so I definitely like that. But that's really interesting. That means that so one of the things that's going to happen in this finale is Avienda, Bane, and Chad are going to meet Randall Thor. They are potentially going to recognize him as the Karakarn. And they're going to say, hey, we've got to take you back. There's a destiny you need to fulfill. and there's going to be some reason for him to do it. So, yeah. I don't know if that's going to be Moiraine. Definitely I don't possible. Know what Lanfear's going to be up to by the end of this. Because she's not going to be sticking around, maybe. And have we lost Loghain already as a mentor? Is he?
I hope not. I love him so much.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if they'll bring him back specifically for, like this idea of the healing that.
Well, I think that's definitely been set up by Lan saying, "Hey, there are two brown sisters who really want to study you," because that's how it started, in the books. So book six, that's where Lord of Chaos, that is where Nynaeve is basically bored. She needs something to do. And she says, "I'm going to study you too." And wonderful things happen. Maybe he's shunted off to a different plot line. But then that gives us, if Rand's going to the waste, that gives us an opportunity for Celine to tap Asmodian on the back and say, "I've got a job for you."
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And no, so that might be how she leaves gracefully. Like, okay, here's your teacher. And I'm so going to come and check on you.
There are three seals in Ashamiel's little boudoir. I assume they're seals, at least. Is that something we think that Ashamiel is kind of keeping those in reserve and waiting for the right time to break them?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Maybe. And if so, like, which three...
Someone with more eagle eyes and know how to screenshot things better than I do could probably tell.
Yeah, and translate that.
Right. Yeah, but maybe Lanfear will find one of the seals, because if he only has three, there's more than that. So maybe that's how she gets Asmodian.
And that's where she starts working cross-purposes.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
All right.
Yeah.
I think that's all the book stuff I have.
Oh, right. Yeah, me too. What about
Maureen?
Anything else?
Now just real quick, why do we think this episode was called Days de Mar?
I think because it centered in Carrion. And we had a lot of the Barthanas stuff and Anvaer, listening in. And the houses, that game of houses was important, kind of. You're getting the kind of the life of Moiraine, her history, and like that family. So that's kind of why I think lots of backhanded and maneuvering and manipulation going on. Across all of the little parts.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, even with the Aes Sedai and with everything going on in Falm, there's so much politicking.
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's all I've got then.
Alrighty. Well, you can find links to follow us online in the show notes or on dragamount.com. On our website, we have so much great content about the Wheel of Time, blog posts, chapter and episode summaries, news, as well as links to our YouTube channel and all of the rest of our show's social media. You will definitely find something to entertain you. Also, make sure to check out our Patreon. Not only do you get to support the community of creators here at Dragamount, but we have a couple other goodies for you too, including the full interviews with the cast that I did in the past. But stay tuned, because now that these strikes are almost over, there might be some other goodies coming along. So make sure you check those out. I have been Kathy Campbell.
I've been and remain Rajiv Mote.
And I'm Maureen Carr.
This is not the ending, but it is an ending. Thanks for listening, and we hope you have an absolutely incredible day.